Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience, produced at a different location every week.
Some people are really scared, and rightfully so. Like, we're now seeing innocent people who are just trying to protect other citizens in our country, who are using their voice and their body, and we've now seen multiple murders. So I understand wanting it being afraid. Some people don't want to just go onto the street with a protest sign, but they would be willing to go to a church with a friend who says, just come sing songs of hope with me.
I'm Bill Motlong from station WDRT in Viroqua, Wisconsin. Today we join Stuart Stotz and his podcast, How Can I Keep From Singing, as he interviews activist and singer-songwriter Heather May in a discussion about the powerful use of song in impacting the ICE protests happening in Minneapolis and other U.S. cities.
Welcome to How Can I Keep From Singing, a podcast where we explore the power of group singing. My name is Stuart Stotz, coming to you from rural Wisconsin, and my guest today is Heather May. Heather May is a genre-defying artist and activist whose music blends the storytelling intimacy of folk with the grit of alternative rock and the hooks of indie pop. She writes anthems about mental health, queer liberation, survivor empowerment, and social justice, inviting listeners into a space of radical honesty and shared vulnerability. Her double album project, What They Hid From Me, has helped to build a devoted community of light seekers and good troublemakers. Her concerts feel less like passive performances and more like participatory gatherings that remind audiences they are worthy, not alone, and very much still here. I would add that Heather May has recently been spending time in Minneapolis and brings her unique perspective on what's happening in the streets and in the shared voices of a resisting community. Heather May, welcome to How Can I Keep From Singing?
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Let's start with just a little bit about who you are, your background. You're a musician. You come from Nashville, I believe. Tell us a little bit about how you came to music at all and what you do as a musician.
I came to music by being a redhead and falling in love with The Little Mermaid when I was 3 years old. I mean, who wouldn't want to own the sea and be, a singer? For me, as a little kid, I fell in love with musical theater, and that was kind of my entry point, was wanting to sing on stage. And then that went into choirs. And then eventually when I entered into writing my own music, I was, just angry at what was happening in the world and wanted change. And I realized that if I took my poetry and put it to song, I could sing it on stage and combine all those things together. And so really early on in my career as a songwriter, I was a social justice songwriter without even realizing that was really what I was.
What did that look like for you? Does that mean a performer who's writing songs about the issues of the day? Does that mean a protest singer at rallies? Mm. What does that look like for you to be a social justice singer?
It's a yes and situation. Not all social justice singers, I have friends who don't go to protest. Their protests and their signs, showing of activism is on a stage and in the records and recording studios. But for me, I grew up outside of Washington, D.C., so protesting, I've been, protesting since I was 12 years old, and I could convince my parents to let me get on the metro and go to D.C. myself. Growing up outside of Washington, D.C. in Northern Virginia, protesting is just in my blood. And so for me, it looks like writing music that is about the change that I wish to see, whether it be LGBTQ rights or women's empowerment, or right now I'm singing and writing a lot of music about fighting the authoritarian regime and ICE absolutely terrorizing immigrant communities. I don't just sing on stages and write music, social justice music. I also, always goes back to my roots. Like, If I'm on tour and there is a protest happening, you will often find me there with my megaphone at said protest, leading chants, singing songs with my guitar. Although in Minneapolis, it's been a little bit too cold to bring my guitar out, so it's just really been me and a megaphone.
Let me ask just a little bit about Nashville, which I believe is where you live. So does that mean you're also at the same time pursuing some sort of career in the larger music business?
Pursuing a career in a larger music business is an interesting sentence, because the music industry has changed so much. Nobody really knows what they're doing anymore. Record labels are freaking out because of AI, and streaming rules everything, and it makes nothing for anyone. So I wouldn't say I'm pursuing a career. I would say I have a career, and I have been doing this music career since, you know, the moment I grabbed a guitar. What I will say is that in Nashville, I am both a song chant leader, a songwriter who writes with other artists, and a touring musician. There are times when I wish I could be home more rather than touring as much as I do. But I have a very strong feeling that I will be forced to be home a lot more given this current administration with their eyes on Tennessee and wanting to make it a poster child for the legislation that they will be passing that will basically legislate the ability for ICE to do what they're doing right now.
So why Minneapolis? You live in Nashville. Why did you come up to Minneapolis?
I was in New Orleans 3 weeks ago. I was at the International Folk Alliance International Conference, and I happened to be attending a peer-to-peer support group for activists and change makers. The moment I found out, and was a friend texted me saying, "Have you heard there's been another murder by ICE?" That was where I learned that Alex Preddy had died. And I just texted my partner, who is also a social justice songwriter. Her name is Chris Matthews. And I messaged her and I said, I'm going to Minneapolis. And her response was just, "Yeah, I figured this might happen." You know, there's something really beautiful in the videos of musicians and singers, activists who are just absolutely taking to the street to protect their fellow Minneapolitans, which I've now learned is what they're called, and St. Paulites. It is a form of community care I have never seen before. And as a long time activist, I remember watching before New Orleans, I remember watching the videos and seeing there's something different here. So there's something different happening here. So many just normal people, just who are not even, they wouldn't even identify as activists, are taking to the streets. There's no conversation about political affiliation or voting, anything. They just are humans who are enraged, doing what they can. And so when I saw the video of Alex protecting that woman and learning that he was a nurse, I just knew, like, I have to go there. I have to meet them. I have to work with them. I have to understand the ethos of what did you all do to get people to wake up and support in all these various different ways? And I'm so glad I did, because what I learned, I think, at least for me on a personal front, to be able to have that information to bring back to Nashville, I think is going to be very important.
You are listening to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of global interest. We return now to Stuart Stotz's podcast, How Can I Keep From Singing?, featuring his interview with activist and singer-songwriter Heather May about the use of song in current protest movements in the U.S.
Let's turn our attention to music in Minneapolis. There are videos that circulate that many, many of us have seen of people singing in the streets, these pieces of music that are somewhere between the line of song and chant, that have been developed often spontaneously and that clearly bring people together. Tell me a little bit about what that's like to be in that situation.
I mean, there's really nothing like it. To be surrounded by thousands of people who are all singing the same words that they just learned. There's no sheet music. There's no lyrics anywhere. It's just ear. Ears connected, voices connected. You know, I one of the things that I say, because I teach song chants. I teach teachers how to lead and teach other people how to chant and how these types of songs and how to go from singing in your church to singing in a street at a protest, how to create these kind of singing circles. I've been doing that for years. And then I went to Minneapolis, and this level, this amount of humans, many of which do not sing. I can't even really explain how it feels. It is an energy. It's a type of hope that I haven't felt in a long time. I will say that. I'm finding myself stumbling over words, which I don't, Stuart, I don't often stumble over my words, but I will be honest with you. It's a feeling that I haven't felt in a very long time.
I appreciate the depth of emotion that you're talking about. And I think many of us on the outside have seen that and responded in some sort of similar way. We've never seen videos of streets filled for blocks with people singing. In a regular sort of American city, you might see it in New York or DC, but this is Minneapolis, and there's something going on there. You've taught people about chanting and street chanting and so on. If you were to offer a quick class in how to be effective in doing that, what are some of the things that you teach?
I say singing is like what Buddy the Elf describes. You know, people are so afraid of singing because they think that they don't have a good singing voice. Buddy the Elf from the classic, you know, holiday movie says singing is a lot like talking, except it's your voice is longer and louder and the notes go up and down. But that's really all it is. If you can cry, you can sing. If you can shout at a football team, like what's the football team in Wisconsin? Green Bay Packers?
Well, the Green Bay Packers, yeah.
Yeah, if you could be like, go Packers! Like you can sing, you know, no justice, no peace. Like you can do that. It is the same. They're the same instrument. It's the same clarinet. It's the same violin. It's in your body. And singing is in our ancestry. It is in our make. It's in our body. It's in our bones. It is, I have seen people who have never sung in a group ever before, who have never stepped in, who've never done any kind of resistance work, that suddenly a group around them is singing, you know, a chant, and they are right there. And they're filling in that middle ground to just and every voice right now is needed. I think one of the things that I say to anybody who will listen is singing and I'll say singing and music is a gentle entry on the on-ramp to resistance, to change, to any good trouble that is required to access liberation for all. Music is a gentle entry into that work. Some people are really scared, and rightfully so. Like, we're now seeing innocent people who are just trying to protect other citizens in our country who are using their voice and their body. And we've now seen multiple murders. So I understand wanting it being afraid. Some people don't want to just go onto the street with a protest sign, but they would be willing to go to a church with a friend who says, just come sing songs of hope with me. And there at these spaces, they are then offered opportunities to join a mutual aid effort, like a food bank, or signing up for being an escort for kids to go to school. signing up to support rent assistance for people who are sheltering in place. It's a beautiful, beautiful entry for good, good trouble.
It sounds like from what you're saying, Heather May, that the singing that takes place in Minneapolis has a slightly different quality than what you've experienced before in a long history of street protest and singing. How would you describe that difference?
You know, I came into Minneapolis like ready, like fiery and ready to go, expecting that I would meet the people who are doing this singing style music resistance, expecting them to be just as fiery as me, you know, megaphone in hand, singing on the top of their lungs, like, I expected that. And what I actually was met was the leadership that was in charge. They don't like to say their leadership because they like to say they're leaderful. But the people who were doing the leading of the songs in these actions were less Emma Goldman and more Joni Mitchell than I was expecting. The songs are from, you know, what you would see in like a Unitarian church. It's very melodic and very almost like nervous system regulating. So less like, no justice, no peace, no justice, no peace. Like less like fiery, repeated, quick, short, staccato singing. Right? Where anybody can jump in like, no justice, no peace, no justice, no peace, singing like that, where it's almost a chant and almost a song, but somewhere in that middle where anybody can join in. Less like that and more like, hold on, hold on. For me, I would have been shy. Before Minneapolis, I would have been shy sharing that with a group of 1,000 people or a group of 300 or a group of 30. The beautiful thing that's happening in Minneapolis is what we're seeing videos of is these giant groups of people taking to the street. But what you're not seeing is these groups are a collective of pods of smaller groups who are doing this exact same thing. But at the vigils, outside of enterprise car rentals, they are outside of the hotels where ICE is staying. They're just standing on the street corner where a family was recently detained. And they know there's a couple people still in the house and they just want to sing to them.
You are listening to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of global interest. We return now to Stuart Stotz's podcast, How Can I Keep From Singing?, featuring his interview with activist and singer-songwriter Heather May about the use of song in current protest movements in the U.S.
I don't know if I would have had the bravery, even as a singer, to present a melodic line like, hold on. I don't know if I would have presented that to a group. And yet, here they are, having singers and non-singers together in a room. And you watch those videos, and it sounds like they've been singing together for decades. What I have noticed is that a lot of the songs in all the trainings and in the that we did and all the various activations at you know, the vigils and on the street corners and everything that we were doing that I was witnessing and working with them, it was never ending, these songs. They had complex rhythms. They were throwing everything out there that, like, even I, in the work that I do, I don't know if I would have done that. And it made me, it really makes me reevaluate, like, my own bias. I have always said, right, music is an easy entry, but I also had my own bias that was pigeonholing what I would offer, but there in Minneapolis, they're throwing everything out. And they're just like, if you just jump in. No, you don't need sheet music, just jump in.
It really reaffirms the sense that something different is happening in Minneapolis than we've seen before, hearing you talk about this. I wonder, are there, the song Hold On, which you mentioned, has been heard and passed around, and are there other pieces that you could give a couple examples of other chants or songs that are working in a similar way?
Yeah, one of the ones that was the most surprising, and I really would love to like focus on that, just how interesting and different the writing is currently in Minneapolis because it is written on the fly. Often the new songs that you're hearing that maybe you have not heard before are not ones that are pre-written. They are being written right now. And one that we sang with Singing Resistance was written by one of the leaders, Annie Schlafer, and she wrote this specifically, I'm pretty sure the night before an activation where we walked from hotel to hotel where ICE was staying downtown in Minneapolis. You know, I think it's called You're One of Us, but maybe it could be We Won't Let Fear Divide Us, but it goes like this. You're one of us, you know, you're one of us. Who knows, there is love and pain inside us. We won't let fear divide us. You're one of us. You know, you're one of us. Who knows, there is love and pain inside us. We won't let fear divide us. We won't let fear divide us. So you can hear like Stuart, you, those minor melodies, like you wouldn't normally, and I don't know about you, but like I have all of the music and communal singing, that's not really like a melody line you often hear, like those, that kind of modality, that kind of feeling musically is not often, it just sounds different. But I think that's something that is really, I'm excited to see how this shifts musical resistance. It's boots on the ground writing. It is people in their homes who are mad, who are channeling what they're feeling from the thing that they probably saw that morning, that they're writing a chant. They're writing a short 6-4, you know, lyric song. And then the next day teaching it. And then immediately you're hearing hundreds of people, thousands of people singing along with them.
It's interesting because the analogy in Singing Resistance is usually the civil rights movement. And those songs came out of the Black spiritual tradition, and the songs were adapted. So people came to the world and to the actions with a sense of music already embedded in them that they could then draw and change the words to fit the situation. This is something very different. First of all, you have people who aren't necessarily coming from a singing tradition, but you're also having these, as you say, musically, they're very different. This is not what I would expect. I've written songs for rallies. I wouldn't write that song, right? Right. I would write something much simpler and more straightforward. And yet, yeah, this is what people are using. And it's something very beautiful and powerful that's happening. And I think this idea of the spontaneous writing, as in, this is a reaction to this moment, only lends even more power.
I mean, social movements like the Civil Rights Movement and Black Lives Matter, like, have publicized and organized around the truth that we have experienced the result of decades-long white supremacists, like, organizing on the right domestically, globally, and, you know, neoliberal politics from Democrats and Republicans, like it has led us here. And we have to use some kind, we all have to unite to fight the power of the systems that are repressing us and continually, you know, forcing acts of violence upon us. And like the problems of racial injustice, economic injustice, they cannot be solved without radical redistribution of political and economic power. That was Martin Luther King, you know, and we see these connections in this current movement with all of us who are doing this kind of singing, collective justice work. We are seeing these connections to the Black Lives Matter movement, where people took to the streets to call to defund and abolish the police. But this is something that far dates the civil rights. You have countries who have used music for calling in other people to resistance. There have been countries for generations who have been using music to overthrow similar situations that we find ourselves in America. It's been really moving as a songwriter and as a social justice songwriter, as an activist, to be working alongside people who are not in folk music, who aren't just songwriters like me who have a guitar. There are groups like Teacup, Twin Cities United Performers, who have been working together as across genres, multi-genres of artists who are, you know, hip-hop artists, punk bands, to DJs, to spoken word, who are creating collaborative projects. You have artists that aren't just singing together, but are actually creating opportunities for recording. Audio engineers who are bringing in these groups, recording them, and then distributing them so people can learn not just from videos, but from recalling and having this like very grassroots guerrilla listening to music that is being written in the moment and then can be sung anywhere, not just in Minneapolis and the Twin Cities. It's really beautiful seeing how music is currently aiding in the resistance and how this is not new. Having artists uniting together, bringing in non-musicians, non-singers to create change. It's really something to watch.
It is certainly part of a long tradition, often an underground tradition. And yet there is, as you've said, some new permutation happening here in Minneapolis. And I will be curious how this affects you going forward as a social justice singer, what lessons you'll be learning or implementing or adapting a year from now, because the struggle, of course, is not done. I'm also just curious how it will affect your writing in over the next years and what it will bring to your own street activism. Heather May, I want to thank you for talking with me here today. I'm very moved by having your on-the-street view of not only what's happening politically, but what's happening musically, that there is something there going on that we all could learn and admire and respect and draw from. Thank you very much for talking with me today.
Thank you for having me, Stuart.
That's it for this week's Sprouts. You have been listening to Stuart Stotz's interview with activist and singer-songwriter Heather May from his podcast, How Can I Keep From Singing? The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the globe. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase globally on Sprouts, contact Ursula Rudenberg at ursula@pacifica.org. This show was produced at WDRT in Viroqua, Wisconsin, by Charlie Noer and yours truly, Bill Motlong. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.